Welcome to the Inspired Intentions Podcast with Skytera Wellness. If you've been too busy and not taking care of yourself, it's time to reset habits and plunge into your new normal. I'm your host, Jeff Ford, and we have a riveting show coming your way. In our first segment of the show today, we have none other than the Director of Fitness, Mitchell Wendling. He is going to be speaking into HIIT, High Intensity Interval Training, and answering a common question that comes up almost every week on campus. In segment two of our show today, we are bringing back a podcast favorite, our Director of Nutrition, Lindsay Ford, and she is going to be finishing off our three-part series on nutrition. The topic is going to be food and mood, and how the way we eat can at times be associated with how we feel. And finally, we're going to round things off in part three of the show, Back to Motivation. We are on the seventh installment of our eight-part motivation series, in which we're going to talk about how when you feel overwhelmed, you're destined to lose motivation. I want to welcome none other than our executive producer, Alan Broyhill.
Hey man, how's it going?
Going well.
You great ready? Intro.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We're switching things up.
Changing it up, always.
Yeah, and I think we're ready for this Q&A. So without further ado, you want to hit our fitness director with the question today?
Yeah, totally. So Mitchell, thanks for coming on, man.
Absolutely.
I get questions all the time about this thing where we term it smart cardio. And Jeff alluded to it. We could say it in a couple different ways, but when we say smart cardio here on campus, what are we talking about?
Yeah, smart cardio, really, I kind of like to break it down into two separate buckets, if you will.
Okay.
You have interval training and high intensity interval training. There's not a massive, massive difference between the two. So let's take a step back. Before that, you kind of have your steady state training, and when we're really just a, you know, one speed, think about walking or a jog, you're doing that for the same speed for a long period of time.
Okay.
Interval training, we're breaking it up with intervals of high or higher speed, fast, if you will, followed by slow. So a nice example is maybe you are on walking or running, you go 2 minutes fast, you followed up 2 minutes slow, more of a recovery speed. Okay. So you're basically getting your heart rate up, getting it down, getting up, getting it down. So those ones, you have typically longer intervals. That 1-to-1 ratio, work to rest ratio, 2-to-2 works very well. When you're talking more about high intensity interval training, you have a much longer rest period following a more intense on or fast period. So for example, that might be a 15 second all out sprint followed by 2 minutes of walking recovery. You do that a handful of times. Why we call it smart cardio is because it is very time efficient.
Okay.
A lot of studies will point towards the smart cardio that we're talking about to have equal or better results in a fraction of the time. So for example, if you could walk for an hour, walk for 60 minutes, but you could go interval style, 2 minutes fast, 2 minutes slow for say 20 minutes and get the same or better results, it's kind of a no-brainer why we wouldn't call it smart cardio.
Seems smart, yeah.
Seems smart, right? Yeah. But yeah, just a lot of the studies show that fluctuation in the heart rate up and down, a lot of benefits to it, a lot of benefits in fat loss as well as lowering your diastolic blood pressure, and there's actually a pretty cool list of benefits.
Yeah. Now, what is the difference with like the interval training and then HIIT? Because you made the delineation earlier with the question.
Yeah, so I like to think of HIIT training as like your all-out intensity. So really, if you're doing true HIIT training, you want basically your maximal effort, and it's hard to sustain longer than, say, 20, really 30 seconds on the high end. So if you're doing true HIIT training, you should not be going longer than that because it's just hard for your body to maintain that. So but because it is so intense, we don't recommend doing it every single day. You know, give yourself at least a day, hopefully two off in between. That's really the big difference, just the time that you're doing your work period.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, man, that makes perfect sense. Appreciate you coming on and answering that. And listeners, I hope you all enjoy the rest of the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the main segment of the Inspired Intentions show. I am joined today with my co-host, executive producer of the podcast, and recreation director, a man of many titles, Mr. Alan Broyhill.
Hi, Jeff. Jeffrey, Speedy Blue Eyes.
I like how your response is so short to my lengthy introduction.
But you don't like it when I talk about you.
Yeah, you know. You know it makes me
I just have to say hi. Yeah.
Well, thanks for dropping the Speedy Blue Eyes. And I think what we want to let listeners in on before we get started is all the power posing we've been doing.
Do you want to tell them what a power pose is? Because I didn't even know what you were talking about.
So a power pose is when you flex your arms, you do something like standing tall. It's work from Amy Cuddy, who wrote a book called Presence. And it makes you feel good. It brings a smile to your face. And by power posing, you can actually change how you feel and your mood.
Your mood.
Yeah. Wow. So that leads us into who we have on air with us today. Someone who has a beautiful smile and a great mood, none other than Lindsay Ford. What's up,
Hello.
Lindsay?
Hello. I think our listeners need to know that I actually came into this podcast today not in a great mood.
Yeah. And how did you change that mood? Was it the power poses?
I watched you guys do power poses.
I know. And
she did a really good Olympic lifter power pose.
Oh yeah, yeah. One arm out, the other one bicep
one curl
action.
They're lying. I just sat here and witnessed you all doing them, and it did make me smile
there
watching you all do it.
Yeah, anything to change our mood is always a helpful
in the moment thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good way to put it. So we are polishing off our 3-part series,
nutrition series.
That's why Lindsay's here, and our topic today is on food and mood. And enhancing your mood with nutrition.
Nice.
You excited about this one, Alan?
I am. It's a class you teach, right, Lindsay?
Yeah, we just started teaching a class called Food and Mood. And it kind of sparked from, I'd say, a lot of conversations with guests, more so one-on-one, where depression, anxiety was taking such a stronghold that it really showed up in eating behaviors not in the direction that they wanted. I'm not a therapist. We've got therapists on staff. And being able to bridge that gap to help them better understand why they might be eating in a certain way when they are struggling.
Yeah.
So the class is really focused on some cool, fun, unique tips.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. How has it been received by guests so far?
Great, because I give out chocolate.
Oh. Anytime you include a free sample,
that's true.
Tend to enjoy the class.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, I'm excited for sure, just because I haven't been able to attend this class yet. But I always hear when the guests come out of it, they're jacked. They really enjoy the time, and you usually get so many questions, you run 10-15 minutes over.
Yeah, it's a problem.
No, great. It's not. It's
just
a good
you
problem.
You have so much wealth and information to share.
That's true.
Yeah, I love it. So let's dive into some of the concepts around food and mood. You mentioned depression and anxiety and helping people figure out why they're eating as an important step to take when we're changing up our nutrition. So when our mood is low or when we're struggling with depression and anxiety, how might this show up with our eating habits?
I'd say observation-wise, and there's probably a lot of science to back this up too, but a greater risk of emotional eating, I'd say coping with food and alcohol. For those that struggle with binge eating, if depression or anxiety is feeling really high, then there most likely is more risk for those types of episodes. I'd say a greater attachment towards sugar, where then that cycle begins and then it becomes hard to break. Reliance on convenience foods. So, I mean, we could probably think about times where all three of us have experienced low points or like just a lot of stress and anxiety, and just the energy to cook just goes away. Maybe not for Alan, because he loves to cook.
I do love to cook,
Where it could be therapeutic, which is fantastic. For some, it just becomes another thing to do. So I'd say eating out, late night eating, those are some things that I think come into play.
Yeah, it sounds like there can be a lot of different habits that show up as a result of our change in mood, and this can happen on a daily level. And even, do you feel like a lot of the guests that you work with get into like a season where their mood is sometimes controlling some of their behaviors around food?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say for the past 3 years, we could take that as one giant season.
sure.
Yeah. COVID. I just heard that the average weight gain was 29 pounds.
Yeah, you were sharing
COVID.
That with me yesterday wow. evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, 29 pounds, huh?
Yeah, and then the rate of alcohol consumption has gone up significantly, especially for women.
Yeah, Sam Adams' stock skyrocketed
okay.
during the pandemic.
Jeff and his stocks.
I used to have some Sam Adams stock, but not when the pandemic was going on.
Yeah, so alcohol consumption's gone up. Calorie consumption's gone up. So
okay.
So we take the past 3 years that have just been very stressful, but that's, I'd say, take that, and it's like we probably all have times where like winter comes around and we're not getting as much sunlight.
Yeah.
Periods of grief, periods of, you know, work responsibilities that it feels really, really high. So I think there's definitely phases and times where it spikes.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if someone feels like they're having feelings of depression or have fallen into depression, what typically shows up from a food relationship behavior pattern?
So when we think of depression, you know, some things that might come to mind: low energy, fatigue, hard to get out of bed, low motivation. I mean, just getting up and taking a shower for some is like a victory. Yeah. Just showing up is a victory. I know for some of our guests, if they're struggling, even while they're here, it's like, gosh, just getting to the 9:10, 10:30 class is amazing, because they're used to sleeping or being in bed for hours and hours and hours. So how that can then show up with food is this desire to, when we do eat or when we are seeking some sort of nourishment, it is most likely going to be in the form of something that's going to give us quick, comforting energy. So think sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us a little bit of a high. I'd say caffeine can come into play here too.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I mean, the frappuccinos all day, you know, the just, I'm just going to drink up on coffee, load it up with sugar and just grind. And then, you know, just a pretty strong reliance on sugar, comforting type foods. What's interesting though, is that can make the cycle worse.
By reaching for stimulants, things that are going to pick somebody up.
Yeah. And there's been some interesting research on this, and I'm not here to be anti-sugar. That's not what I'm trying to do. And for those that consume more than 16 teaspoons of added sugar a day, it has been linked to depression symptoms worsening.
Wow.
So that's where once that cycle begins, it can be so hard to stop, but it can actually probably make it worse.
Yeah. So it's like I'm having feelings of depression. I'm in a state of depression. I reach for sugar. I consume sugar. And then that feeds those feelings of depression even further.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It can for sure.
Now, how does intermittent fasting and extreme restriction of food show up with mood changes that we might experience?
Yeah. So one of my concerns with, I'd say, the push towards intermittent fasting and I'd say pretty extreme restriction, we could even pull keto into the mix here, is it doesn't really look at depression or anxiety and eating behaviors. It literally is looking more at the physiology aspect. So it might look more at blood sugars. It might look like, so there's a lot, I don't want to go into a pigeonhole about that, but my concern is that if we go long periods of time without eating, intermittent fasting, we're actually not getting a dose of food, which that actually makes us happy. I mean, when we eat, I mean, if you had breakfast this morning, it does boost your mood.
When you eat, which neurotransmitter fires in the brain?
So there's a lot, but the two main that we'll talk about later today. So we got dopamine and serotonin.
Okay. And what I hear you saying about IF, intermittent fasting, is that when we look at the literature around it, yes, it may speed changes in fat and our body, and yet the science doesn't look at one factor to consider is that not eating doesn't support boosting your mood necessarily.
Correct.
Okay. Now, how about anxiety? We've talked a bit about feelings of depression and how that can lead to changes in our eating patterns. What do you see different when it comes to anxiety?
Yeah. So some, you know, going back to the depression, we talked about low energy, you know, hard to get out of bed, poor motivation. Anxiety might be the go, right? Like the motivation might be there, but it's never stopping. It is, and I would say I fall more into this category, where it's, all right, we got to do this and we got to do this and kind of being in a state of that fight or flight often. For those that I think really, really struggle with this, it is, there could be a sense of panic. They can really feel it in their body, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. So this is the high sympathetic state. This is the fight or flight.
Hi, everybody. Do you hear that sound? That bird in the podcast booth? It's the sound of the early bird getting the worm. And that early bird is your friendly reminder to plan ahead when booking your next Skytera stay. On average, we are reserving up to 4 weeks in advance. We have so much happening on campus this spring and summer, our pickleball courts, our new outdoor living center, and at some point soon, our pool. We cannot wait to host you and show you all the ways we're continuing to grow and take flight. And we would be so disappointed if you missed out. So visit SkyterraWellness.com or call our reservations team to book your stay. And again, please make sure you're planning ahead. We cannot wait to welcome you back to our nest. Back to the show.
What types of foods do folks tend to go towards as they're in this flight or fight that you're explaining?
Yeah, so in this state, we're probably ultimately wanting a sense of calm. We want to actually feel down. And so the drive towards alcohol, I'd say, could increase because
Interesting.
It is a natural downer.
Mm. So okay. So with depression, we reach for stimulants. And then with anxiety, it's like, let's look for natural depressants.
Yeah. Maybe not so black and white in that. However, I'd say big picture,
okay,
for those that are more in that anxiety prone, the desire to seek alcohol can definitely be heightened because it is a natural downer.
Yeah.
I work really hard all day. I've done all my things and I just want to open up the bottle of wine and drink. The other thing would be comfort food. So things like breads and pastas and things that actually have more of a calming effect. So we'll use the example of like candy is more of like a reward high effect, I'd say, you know, and they're both carbohydrates, you know, bread versus candy, mm-hmm. but bread has more of a calming effect. So there might be more desire for those types of foods.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes total sense. I'm with you. I fall within that anxiety setting for sure.
Yeah.
I can feel it in my body. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Maybe have cravings one way or the other for
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like if someone puts a salad in front of you, how do you feel? Nauseous. Like, don't even give me the salad. That is just no. Yeah, like,
that's not what I need right
now. That's not what I need right now.
Hard to pump down when you're in that
maybe
state.
Salad, but my main event needs to be something genuinely kind of comforting.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear about the relationship between the foods we consume and the feelings that we're having. And I think that's what you've painted a great picture of, Lindsay. What foods and suggestions do you have for enhancing the feelings that our body are after? And what I mean by the feelings that our body are after, I'm speaking to like, okay, it seems like we're searching for serotonin and dopamine through our food. So what suggestions do you have so that we can make sure we get that appropriate signaling?
Yeah, so we definitely want adequate serotonin and dopamine to be released throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two really powerful neurotransmitters that are mood enhancers. Serotonin is connected to a sense of more calm, and it's actually connected to sleep. And then got dopamine that is another neurotransmitter that's connected to pleasure and reward and motivation and learning. And so we want both of these to be secreted throughout the day so that we do feel, you know, let's just say happy throughout the day.
Yeah.
Now with serotonin, what is interesting, well, with both of these, they are actually food made chemicals. So tyrosine is the precursor to dopamine, and tryptophan, which some of us have probably all heard of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Is the precursor to serotonin. So those, so those are two essential amino acids that we have to get from food that are actually the precursors. So it's a building block.
Now, clarifying question, when there's a precursor like tryptophan and tyrosine, does that mean in order for serotonin and dopamine to secrete at their higher levels or to start that process, it requires us to consume these foods?
We need these foods in order to produce an adequate amount of serotonin and dopamine.
Gotcha. So this ensures that you're going to fulfill that appropriate amount.
Yeah. Now let's go back to when we feel anxious and or depressed.
Okay.
All right. So what foods did we crave?
When we're anxious, you said we craved more of like
something
common,
that's
going
to bring us down, carbohydrates.
Alcohol, comfort carbohydrates.
Yeah, carbs.
Yeah.
And then with depression, you said
carbs.
More foods.
Sugar.
Sugar. Going to upregulate.
Yeah. So we have this desire for carbs. What's interesting is both tryptophan and tyrosine are amino acids.
Ooh, okay.
So think about that for a second. These are actually proteins. These are amino acids.
Yeah.
And so we get more tryptophan and tyrosine out of our protein sources.
Wow.
So there's actually some theory right now that we will not stop eating or feel satisfied until we actually get enough tyrosine, tryptophan.
Into the body.
Into the body in general. Yeah. So
that makes sense because I've always heard that protein earlier in the day helps manage satiety throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, I bet any of our viewers could pull up all the research. And I'm not saying like, hey, go become a carnivore. Like, that's not great either.
Yeah,
But getting a lot of protein, getting enough protein throughout the day, we typically are left more satisfied, not just from a sense of fullness, but there's something that happens in the brain that we can probably connect back to where it's like, oh, I was actually really satisfied. And now, With tryptophan, we can also get it from milk, dairy, fruits, chocolate actually has some tryptophan in it.
Cool.
Tyrosine.
I feel like you love to throw chocolate in there whenever possible.
100%. But if you like chocolate, usually it does kind of make you happy.
Yeah.
It's a nice little mood booster. And then tyrosine, it's not just animal proteins. There's other sources of that too. It is just in general, we need enough of these essential amino acids to produce enough serotonin and dopamine.
I would say I see this most of the time with breakfast for myself. If I don't have that appropriate amount of protein coming in for breakfast, I feel a difference very quickly.
Yeah.
Starting my day off, like how focused I am almost. Yeah.
Which is amazing. That's the other thing is it kind of makes me think, you know, if the viewer or you as an individual where it's like you get used to a certain amount, and then if all of a sudden you have a day or two where it's not there, then you can really feel it of like, gosh, I just feel different today. I don't have as much energy.
Yeah.
I still ate something, but it's just different. So,
I think that's important to create awareness around when we don't have that same meal that we're used to. And then that impacts our mood. Wow, that's feedback for us on how we can design our days in a more planned and prepared way so that we eat the foods that increase our mood.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I kind of stumbled just upon it myself. I've never really thought about it with the science behind it. But tryptophan, why do I know that? Is that like the same thing that they always talked about, like you eat turkey at Thanksgiving, it makes you sleepy?
Yeah,
right?
100%. Yeah. So there's actually, even for those that struggle with sleep at home, there's some reasoning behind having a meal later in the day where you actually have a decent amount of tryptophan so that it can help promote sleep. The other thing would be, I mean, whole grains have some tryptophan. So there are some carb sources that have tryptophan too. So the last meal of the day, there's some reasoning around, hey, that is not necessarily the meal to cut carbs. That would be the meal to
almost encourage them.
Encourage it.
Yeah. I think
that
makes sense
from
an expenditure of your day as well, to just kind of replenish the body, especially if we have a lot of activity or go, go, go within that day.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a big suggestion that you make here for our guests who have been doing a lot of fitness, doing a lot of hikes or whatever, the expenditures, balancing that SkyTerra plate out.
For sure. And I think that's important because we've always been told like have your biggest meal first in the morning and then a little smaller as the day goes on, where it's much more complex than that.
Yeah.
And we have to look at, you know, which foods enhance the feelings that each of us are after on the individual level.
Yeah.
So we've heard a lot in the nutrition world right now about gut health and mood regulation. What is the connection here, Lindsay?
This is a very hot topic, and I find it extremely fascinating. There's still a lot I don't know, but I'd love to know. And one of the major connections here is the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is the one of the major connectors of the brain to the gut and the gut to the brain. So not necessarily specifically talking about food, but more of how our brain and our gut is absolutely connected. So when we're feeling down or when we're feeling high anxiety, our vagus nerve connects to our gut. And so one of the major cranial nerves. And so a nervous system response is most likely happening. So we might have greater nausea. We might have GI symptoms, upset stomach. We might have bowel movements that are inconsistent. We might have just discomfort in general. So classic IBS symptoms can be more prevalent, especially in times of increased depression, anxiety. And a lot of this is kind of coming back to the vagus nerve conversation.
And tell our listeners what IBS is if they don't know.
IBS is irritable bowel syndrome. It's the most common GI diagnosis out there. But the vagus nerve is being talked about a lot just because of the brain-gut connection and how it literally, we can have our mood be at a certain place and then it impacts the vagus nerve. And then vice versa, the vagus nerve can then impact our mood.
Wow. So this is almost the mechanism of communication between the food that you're eating and how you're feeling upstairs.
100%.
What's this whole thing about microbes and that kind of thing that's happening in our gut?
So that's another component of gut health is the microbiome, which are microbes that live within us, on us, but we'll just say mostly within us. These microbes, bacteria, yeast, fungus, virus.
I think we talked a little bit about it before on an episode.
Yeah.
Have you ever done full gut health episode?
I don't think so. Not a full gut health episode, but we've kind of touched on microbes just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Keep going,
so,
Lindsay.
So there are certain bacterial strains that are now being connected to anxiety, depression, different mental health conditions. I'd say the wave of the future will be certain probiotics that will be prescribed to help be a piece of the puzzle. So that there's the idea of it is how can we also heal from the inside out? So similar to someone taking an antidepressant and anxiety medication, there would be this other component of taking a probiotic. I think it's still early stages, but I think more and more people are recognizing the value of these.
I've heard you talk about this before for sure. And that just, it just makes so much sense that when you have a living mechanism going on in you that it would affect you from the inside out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a pretty complex topic. I just think it's valuable for our viewers to know, like, this is probably something to look out for in the future, where there is this mood enhancement of how can we also look at gut health being another variable to support enhancing your mood.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, I never looked at kind of a supplementation for our gut and its relationship with someone's mood. So I think that's an interesting angle that
you're sharing. Yeah, that's incredibly interesting.
To keep it simple, because we know gut health is the hot topic, there's more and more information coming out. What could our listeners do to like tend to their gut today so that it doesn't impact their mood in a negative way?
Yeah, I'd say one thing would be to find strategies to actually put the body into like a calm place to relax the vagus nerve. So breath work, meditation, gentle yoga. I think breath work can be really powerful. So that's something that we started doing here at SkyTerra more regularly. So getting into that parasympathetic state. And then for the microbiome, being able to think of how can I feed my healthy bacteria? How can I keep my bad bacteria low? So this would be cautioning excessive added sugar. We don't want to go too far down that road, making sure we're getting enough plant food because that can help feed the healthy bacteria. So, I mean, there could be probiotics into the mix too.
Yeah, I think that's a nice overview. You're saying routines that encourage rest and relaxation, because that will impact our gut. And then making sure that we're following nutrition plans that have lots of vegetables, plant foods within it, so that we can bring that good bacteria in. And then watching out for the sugar, because the more sugar that comes into our diet, that could feed the quote-unquote bad bacteria.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're getting towards the end of our time, and this is where we try to, every episode, as you know, Lindsay, give guests some action steps so that they can take this information and put it into practice. And what I think we're after today is helping viewers, as you would say,
listeners.
Yeah. we're after helping our viewers.
I love our viewers.
Wanting them to improve their mood through food. So what are some unique ways that our viewers can improve their mood through food?
So outside of getting enough protein, which we already talked about,
yeah.
Outside of getting more into that parasympathetic state, which physically makes us feel better, there are some interesting potential supplements to factor in. Before we get there, I would avoid skipping meals. That's not going to do anyone any favors, because by having a balanced meal, that's going to give you the carbs, protein, fat, micronutrients that really can boost our mood. It just doesn't have to be, you know, an excessive amount of any one thing,
mm-hmm.
which then leaves other things out. So this doesn't mean, hey, just eat a bunch of eggs and dismiss, you know, maybe a slice of toast in the morning. So balanced meals, avoid skipping meals. And then I would have breakfast daily. I'd say for a lot of folks, this is helpful for them. It is not unhelpful. So this goes actually kind of against the idea of intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, if you actually look at the definition of breakfast, it is breaking a fast. So this is a way to start the day, give yourself some solid energy. It'll probably make you happy. You could even add some coffee to that, because that has been connected to boosting our mood, which we have a whole separate podcast on caffeine and coffee where we talk about that. So
that was episode one of this.
Yeah,
series.
The nutrition series. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So go back to that. Vitamin D is huge. So vitamin D is another side one that, I mean, for those that have ever had really low levels, I mean, the link to depression and anxiety is actually heightened if levels are low.
Yeah. So, well, essentially vitamin D, serotonin, that connection is there.
It is totally there. Zinc is another one that isn't talked about a lot.
What types of foods never hear have it. Zinc?
So guess.
I have no idea.
Okay. Protein. Go figure.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, okay, that makes
eggs,
sense.
Poultry, red meat. A lot of, now there's other foods too, but those are the highest. With our zinc, what they're finding is that for those that have low levels of circulating zinc, it is being connected to higher levels of anxiety. Pretty interesting. The cool thing about zinc is it probably wouldn't hurt to take a low dose supplement, and it's also being connected to immune support. So,
okay.
'Tis the season.
So can't are you hurt. Saying like a zinc supplement could help someone's, like backdoor help with someone's mood?
It could. Cool. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to try.
Pretty harmless.
And then magnesium is another one, because it has more of a calming effect. So in the evening, that could be really, really valuable. This is not me trying to endorse a supplement, but there's a supplement called Calm that folks could mix in with their water, with their tea. So that would be something really nice. An Epsom salt bath that has magnesium, so it could soak through the skin, usually has a really nice calming effect. But like nuts and seeds, dark leafy greens, beans and lentils have magnesium, but how many of us are actually getting enough of that? So
right.
Magnesium is a sneaky one that can be missed. Omega-3s have been talked about, especially with depression, but it would be like a high dose omega-3 supplement, like high dose. So I don't want to necessarily go down that road too much. But yeah, there could be some micronutrients, some vitamins, some minerals that could be kind of floated into the mix.
So high level, to improve your mood via food, it's looking at maybe some of the nutritional deficiencies that might be showing up with the meals that you're eating each day.
Yeah. Asking yourself, am I getting enough protein? am I skipping meals?
Sorry to cut you off. One thing I really like that you do is you encourage guests to do like a 3-day snapshot of their food, or sometimes just writing out what you've consumed the last 3 days could help you start taking action on some of these tips.
Yeah, if you go on to SkyTerra at Home, there is a section within the free resources, a nutrition and culinary section. There's actually a nutrition awareness journal.
Oh, yeah.
And this journal is a way to actually track what you've consumed throughout your day. But it's not asking how many calories did you consume, how many macros, how many points.
You're looking at the quality.
It is not even that. It is what did I eat today and what is my mood connected back to what I've consumed.
How are you assessing mood on that on the awareness journal? Like what?
So there's a little section that asks for what your mood is at breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks.
Okay,
so like a scale, like a 1 to 10,
happy, mad, frustrated.
So someone, whatever they're feeling, they could just put it in there. Cool. Okay. And then there's also some boxes so people can rate their hunger and fullness.
Mm. Great.
Yeah. Which would be using the hunger and fullness scale. So it's a really great tool if you're just starting to get into paying more attention to this.
Yeah, it sounds like a incredibly helpful tool because I think the more we can associate what we're eating with, like what we're consuming on a daily basis with how we're feeling, the more we can be motivated to make changes with.
Yeah. Yeah, because people beat themselves up. I just eat so much at night. I just can't stop. Once I start, it's hard to stop. And I would bet you more often than not, it's not actually about the food at all. Let's stop blaming the food. Let's actually just be more aware of what was our mood prior and just draw more awareness to it.
Wow.
And you missed one thing on here.
What
chocolate.
Oh, all the chocolate. We need all the chocolate. Yes.
Always your recommendation.
Yes. Well,
these are a lot of great tips, Lindsay. Thanks for coming on once again today to maybe wrap up quickly some of the takeaways that I heard. Is number one, looking at your protein intake, seeing if you're getting enough protein throughout your day. Second is rest and relaxation practices. Maybe thinking about plugging some of those practices in so it helps with the foods that you want to put into your body. And then I heard loud and true in this kind of last call to action time, breakfast and thinking about plugging that back in if you've been away from breakfast for a while.
Yeah, not skipping meals.
Yeah,
any other takeaways for you, Alan?
Yeah, I just the microbiome was really interesting. I want to hear more on that for sure. But it's just all this seems to flow really well. It makes total sense. Glad you got to come on and talk a little bit about it today. I see why there's so much value for the guests.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks, Lindsay. This has been awesome.
Great to be here.
And you're still smiling.
Still
like
smiling.
You
I'm still not doing a.
Do you want another power pose?
No, I don't. The power pose, yeah. Lindsay. Come
I don't want a power pose.
Here,
right
we'll
now.
Power pose for you.
There you go. Right there. All right. Well, listeners, hang out for the 5-minute focus. That's what's up next.
Have you ever felt like your to-do list never stops growing? You check one task off your list and add two more? Just like you, I have a big to-do list. And just like you, it can feel overwhelming. And do you know what happens to all of us when we feel overwhelmed? Can you guess? We lose motivation. I was listening to a podcast just this morning, and the guest was Charles Duhigg, author of Smarter, Faster, Better, and The Power of Habit. He mentioned that overwhelm sets in quite quickly when we use our to-do list as a memory list. What's the difference? Well, a to-do list is meant to help you prioritize. A memory list is to help you remember. We all have a million things flying at us any given moment. But the problem we run into is what to do first. What to prioritize. When you are unable to decide on what is most important to do first, that's the moment that overwhelm starts to set in. That's the moment you immediately start to lose motivation. Think about being stressed to the point that you say, screw it, I don't even care. Or when you're under intense pressure at work and you say, I don't care enough to continue, whatever. We've all been there, because life is overwhelming. If your lack of motivation is due to overwhelm, my goal today is to remind you that just like every other human being on the planet, there's only 24 hours in a day. The sun comes up and the sun goes down. As a living, breathing person, you don't have an amazing ability to get everything done. And when you get the right things done at the right time, life is less stressful. Motivation starts to rise. Charles Duhigg points out that the difference between our productivity and general feelings of overwhelm, person to person, are not as drastic as it might seem. It merely depends on our skill and ability to prioritize. So, practical solution to decrease the overwhelm and increase your motivation. Here's what I want you to do. Change up how you structure your to-do list. Have two lists. One list that is a memory list, and one list that is a daily to-do list. The memory list is everything that's on your plate. It's all the things that are coming at you. It's everything that gets sent your way. It's everything that pops into your brain. Whether it's personal, family, or work tasks and ideas, load up your plate. This is the list to do that. Now here's the magic. Use the memory list each morning and ask yourself these two questions. What is the number one most important thing on this list? And two, what is the one thing that I must get done today that if I did it, would change things for the better? Duhigg suggests that you start with one thing, only one thing on your to-do list, and then decide on a second in case the day goes well. If you're going to make a choice on a third, that to-do will most likely happen the next morning. Life is less overwhelming when we pare down and focus on crushing one important task at a time, rather than trying to do too many things simultaneously. It's like that old saying, if you chase two rabbits, you won't even catch one. The message here today is simple. Your skill and ability to prioritize one to-do at a time decreases overwhelm. When you decrease overwhelm, motivation remains high. Wow, what a great show it has been today. We had none other than our director of fitness on to answer a question around interval training and high intensity interval training HIIT and how to think about incorporating that into your life. We then had such a fun time with my wife, director of nutrition, Lindsay Ford. And I don't know about you, but I now have such a deeper understanding of how food can impact our mood. And finally, I hope you enjoyed our 5-minute focus today. I have gotten my motivation back, as you can tell. I'm feeling less overwhelmed. And I hope the call to action around switching up the focus and getting very clear with one thing every day on that to-do list will lead to increased motivation. We can't wait to have you back here next week. We're going to be wrapping up the motivation series, and we'll have none other than Jeremy Whitworth coming on air with us, the first outside guest on the Inspired Intentions podcast. He's going to be speaking into mindset, a topic that we've never covered, and I think you're going to get a lot of silver bullets. I want to give special thanks to our executive producer, Alan Broyhill, who would love to hear from you. He works so hard to make this podcast so smooth, and he's always looking for new ways to improve the show that we bring you every single week. As always, questions are encouraged so that those can show up in the Q&A. And if you do enjoy our podcast, honestly, just sharing this podcast with someone in your life would make a huge difference. I hope you can join us next week as we cut through the unrealistic noise on diets and fitness and show you how healthy living can fit seamlessly into your already busy life. Thanks for listening.